Albion. Don't falter. Good afternoon. It's nearly 12:15 here in Hong Kong. A couple of hours later in Oz, where Boris Mislowski, our business futurist, is. How are you today?
I'm very good, Phil.
Awesome. I've been saying 36 years since man landed on the moon. It's actually 46, isn't it?
Yeah, it must have been asleep for a couple of those.
I think so.
I won't ask what caused that.
I remember having a commemorative mug from that day when I was a very small baby. So I vaguely remember. I must do. Should I ask you, can you remember?
Yeah, I do. I actually remember I was in primary school. I was in second grade. And I remember being taken down to the hall with all the other students sitting cross-legged on the floor watching an old black and white TV.
That was it. Where'd you go with the zeitgeist about it being in a Hollywood backlot?
Oh, look, I don't want it to be true.
I don't want it to be true.
I want to believe that we were there.
Yeah, good. Well, look, according to Morris, there are a lot of things that we use in our daily life now that were sort of NASA technology. I suppose some were directly attributable to that project and other moon projects, and some are just sort of offshoots of. What do you got?
Well, there's lots of them that are offshoots of, because a lot of money went into space. I mean, literally billions and trillions of dollars. So the offshoot was that we as mere mortals got to use some of the toys. One of the ones that many people use every day is the good old microwave oven.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of medicines we think of that are used for one thing, but they were designed for something completely different. Is that a similar story?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the microwave oven was designed in 1945 by a guy called Dr. Percy Spencer, and its purpose was not to cook at all. Its purpose was to be able to look into space. So he was using the microwaves to be able to project into space. It was bouncing back and giving him a picture like a radar. What he found one day when he was doing his bouncing backwards and forwards with these light waves was that the chocolate bar in his pocket melted.
Oh.
And that was literally what he attributes to coming up with this idea of trying to figure out why it melted and then putting it back to the microwave and then eventually turning that around to being able to maybe cook something for us.
So if his chocolate bar in his pocket melted, that means they were hitting him. I don't know much about how microwaves affect us, apart from the obvious.
Yeah, I don't know what took him off Earth. Maybe it was unfortunately the microwave. But yeah, you're right, it would have hit his body. So it certainly is much of what we talk about today, whether it's healthy and good for us. But
okay. Is a lot of the stuff cooking, kitchen stuff?
Is a lot of the stuff...
The NASA technology that you're talking about.
No, there's other stuff as well. So there's a big craze around in Australia, and I'm assuming it's in Hong Kong, and that's invisible braces for adults. So it's the braces that children might have had or have now, but it's worn mostly by adults, and it's see-through. Now, the invisible braces actually came about, again, because of NASA technology and had nothing, of course, to do with making the astronauts' teeth beautiful. It was, in fact, the coating that they used on top of the antenna of the heat-seeking missile trackers. And what it meant was that this very lightweight, which, if you want to know the correct term for it, was translucent polycrystalline alumini.
Oh, thanks.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, I know you were talking about that yesterday over coffee. But that's what was invented, to be able to coat these antennas so they'd be able to go through space. Now, they were really thin and really durable, and I don't know how they got to it, but somebody got to the connection of, well, if they're thin and durable, then maybe they'd be terrific in my mouth and would straighten my teeth. And that's invisible braces.
Let me have a guess here, Morris. I'm thinking if it's stuff that's durable and works with humans, we're talking about prosthetic limbs and stuff as well.
Well, we most probably are. It hasn't gone that far. Now, some of the other ones is a shoe insole. You know, the thing we wear inside of our shoe to give us a bit more strength or to make sure our foot's facing the right way? That was absolutely out of NASA, and the scientists that invented it put it together really to make sure that when our astronauts did that spring that we all see on the moon, that they landed well and that their feet weren't damaged. And that was...
That would have spurred things like, runners talking about getting the perfect... form for almost like barefoot running. I suppose that takes us in that avenue as well.
Yeah, it does. So the good old shoe insole that you and I go into a local store and pay a couple of dollars for started its life on the moon.
A lot of those things are meant to be for, you know, sucking up body moisture and stuff. I wonder if that played in there as well.
And with this one supposedly not. It was literally that they were fearful that the astronauts, as they bounced around the moon, might not land properly. and this would help to give them that even kilter. Because again, on the moon there's no gravity, it was much lighter, but those suits are very heavy, very cumbersome. I mean, heavy wasn't the issue, but cumbersome was on the moon. Another one which I find fascinating was the baby food. A lot of the baby food that we buy in supermarkets now was in fact invented by NASA for the astronauts, and it wasn't to give them the food in space at all. It had nothing to do with food at that stage. What they were doing was they were trying to figure out how to create artificial oxygen in space in case they ever ran out. And they sent some algae up into space. And what they found was that this algae, when it went into space, changed its characteristics. And it ended up having some very fatty acids in it. The same fatty acids that are found in women's breast milk. Now, don't ask me how someone knew that, but apparently they did. So when this algae came back to Earth, it was looked at, it was found to have those properties, and after a number of years, began to be used in baby food.
So a lot of this stuff developed its modern-day usage quite by mistake, or I wonder if there's any when somebody said, actually, ha, we can use this in the home.
Well, there were some, but a lot of them are serendipity. A lot of them just happened because, you know, they spent a lot of money inventing them. Somebody thought, that's a great idea, what else can we do with them? There's some fairly straightforward ones. The water filter that many of us used were definitely part of the NASA spaceship, and that was simply because they were taking water up into space for a long period of time. They wanted to make sure that it was pure as it could be, and NASA invented the charcoal filter. Now that's fairly straightforward, and that came back to Earth, and it is what we use today in many cases.
That's amazing. I'll tell you what, Morris, just as you're speaking to me now, it says at 10:56 p.m. EDT, Neil Armstrong is ready to plant blah blah blah. Well, that's kind of half an hour ago, isn't it?
Yes.
So we're nearly right on the money here.
We nearly are. Of course, that's assuming he was there at that time.
That's indeed, yeah. Go on, carry on. Tell us some more. These are cool things.
So the other one, because you wanted some straightforward ones, the other one is the smoke detector. Smoke detector, again, fairly straightforward. Most of us have them in our homes, and of course we never want them to go off. They were put into space for exactly the purpose that we have them. Some brilliant scientists thought, what happens if there is smoke or if there's fire in the spaceship? How would we ever know? And smoke detector was born.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point, because how does smoke behave in a zero gravity environment?
Yeah, because you can't smell it. It doesn't have the properties that we have it on Earth. You could obviously see it, but you would have to see it, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you would see it in time. So the smoke detector was what was born out of that. Now another one for those gamers that are listening was the good old joystick. You know, the joystick that we play games with was invented absolutely by NASA, and its purpose was to help us land on Moon. It was for the Apollo mission, so that they would be able to guide the spacecrafts from where they had to be onto the surface of the planet or on the surface of the Moon.
You mean like the little kind of tabletop?
Yeah. Yeah, that little tabletop had its little joystick in there, and they would use the joystick to be able to guide themselves around space to be able to find where they had to be. And of course that's gone on to be something that gamers and a whole lot of us are using, and there's talk of it coming back into the motor vehicle in the next 10 or 15 years too.
And indeed fly-by-wire pilots, you see, it's scary.
Yes.
You see these guys, you expect them to have a, you know, great big whatever in front of them, but no, they've got this little joystick going on.
Isn't it quite incredible? And also the same with really big trucks too, the ones they use in mining. Often those just have a joystick in them as well, and helicopters. So many, many, many transportation now have that joystick.
I do want you to tell me some more things on the list, but bearing in mind your game is what's called, you know, business futurism.
Yes.
Is there any stuff that you see that we've inherited from NASA, but it's about to take a different avenue and get evolved even more? Maybe microwave, I don't know.
Well, maybe microwave. I think that the next big invention, and we've talked about it quite a bit, is 3D printers. And NASA's just about to start using them in space. At the end of this year, they're going to send up a food printer. And early into next year, they're sending up another printer, and its job will be to print spare parts for things that break down in space, so that they won't have to wait for the next shipment or the one after that before they can do something. And
yeah.
I think those two technologies, even though we've seen them here quite a bit, once they get into space and they become useful and purposeful there with a lot more money stuck behind them and the media hype of it, I think again we'll see a kick-on effect down here because of it.
Okay, well, let's take it in a different area. What about things for navigation, for instance? I mean, basic GPSs or something like that?
Well, GPS again came out of this sort of technology. It was the desire, of course, to know at a pinpoint where these huge spaceships were when they were in space. The GPS goes back, I think, to the 30s and 40s as a basic tool, and has been evolved ever since. Certainly we're talking about satellites in all of these, and GPS requires satellites, and satellite, of course, and satellite TV. So satellite TV, radio, GPS, all of those absolutely came out of all of these space missions. The only reason they went up there was to be able to track the spaceships, and then we began to beam them back to Earth.
Well, you talked about the joystick there that gamers use, so taking that thought a little bit further, let me throw in, what about the mouse?
The mouse was actually not an invention from NASA. The mouse was actually invented, theoretically, by Apple. It was an Apple invention long before it was a Microsoft invention. They copied it afterwards. And it was an attempt to be able to find something that was more intuitive rather than a keyboard.
Right, and there's two other pieces of clothing that I'm just having to think about as we're speaking that skiers will use. One is the great big boots they have, and the other one would be UV sunglasses. Anything there?
Now, I don't know about the boots, although I can see why, and that possibly is, but definitely the sunglasses were. What we have in sunglasses is both the scratch-resistant and the UV-blocking sunglasses were both absolutely NASA invention.
Incredible. I mean, you wonder what people did before the 60s for this kind of stuff, simplest things.
Yeah, absolutely. But with most of these things, which are quite simple and quite inexpensive now, they're only inexpensive after a period of time. Somebody spent a lot of money coming up with the invention and the thought of it, and then eventually it trickled down to things that you and I can use. And that's often what governments do. We see them spending a lot of money on what seems to be wasted stuff, and it might take us a generation even to figure out what its purpose is. And sometimes with NASA, that's exactly it. It might take 10 or 15 years for somebody to figure out that, you know, the algae they sent up, in fact, mimics some kind of baby food and is purposeful somewhere else. All of a sudden, that's a great use of that money, but it might not have been originally.
It's got to be a lot of trial and error. I'll tell you what, just for a bit of fun, whilst we're talking, I've just typed in things NASA did not invent, and two big ones come up, because, you know, there's a few wives' tales about this too. And apparently, NASA did not invent Velcro or Teflon. I'm assuming we think they did.
Teflon, I thought, was, but absolutely. Oh, that's interesting.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, the technology's all there. You can think of all sorts of uses for it, for covering equipment and rockets or whatever.
Because Teflon was definitely used on the spacecraft, but obviously it wasn't invented by them all.
It's the internet, Maurice. You more than most people know that you don't believe everything you see.
Well, this is true. This is true. but we must take it as at least a source of information.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then disregard it totally and find out the real facts.
What about cordless things? Yeah, exactly. Cordless things. Perhaps even the cell phone camera. Perhaps even the cell phone itself.
I don't know if they came out of NASA, but they certainly would have purpose up in space. Lots of things like that might have. I mean, you couldn't imagine that anything would be really tethered to much else up there. There's very confined spaces with astronauts flying around.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about the stuff you're telling me today is a lot of it, as I say, was kind of, it's off prescription. It was discovered by accident, and I suppose in the way of things, that's what happens.
And that really is what innovation is all about, because very few of us actually set out to solve a problem, solve it, and then get on with selling that solution. We often solve a problem by finding something we never thought existed before. It really didn't fit the purpose, but then maybe a day, a week, a month, a year later, we have that aha moment at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, well, why can't we use it for that? And often
it brings up something really interesting, Maurice, that somebody sets out to design a certain thing for a certain purpose. They do that, but they're so focused on that certain purpose that the offshoots we don't get. I think superglue is a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, and so is the sticky notes.
Again, what's the story there?
Well, the story is invented by 3M, by a scientist there. He was, and 3M was very much about putting glue into the marketplace. He came up with a glue that didn't stick. I mean, can you imagine being paid by a company that makes its life by producing glue and then saying, well, I've got something that doesn't stick? And literally, they pilloried him. I mean, you know, there was nothing good to be said about him. It took about 10 years or so. And what he was doing with the glue, unbeknownst to anybody else, was he'd put it on little bits of scrap paper and stick it on books and stick it on all kinds of things so that he could peel it off again. Somebody saw that one day and thought, what a brilliant idea. That should actually be a product rather than just a throwaway use for it while we're looking for something else to do. And over a period of time, that became the product.
It does, doesn't it? I suppose you could really turn back the clock on this one and say things like, bottled water, for instance, or even the combustion engine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bottled water always gets me. I still struggle to understand why it's a trillion-dollar industry. It just doesn't make sense. If you said to somebody in the 1980s or 1990s, I'm going to make you a fortune, I need you to invest in bottled water, I think that they would send you off to the moon.
I think they probably would, Morris. And there's an interesting area we should go into another day, the 80s. I mean, the sort of one-celled animal, if you like, of a lot of the things that we use today was born in the 80s or was gestated in the 80s. But it wasn't that long ago.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the 80s, the 60s is also another fascinating era because it was really around that science fiction time. Once we started to think that we might be able to go to the moon, even before we went, but that 60s period was all about that evolution of let's go further than we ever did before, you start to see a lot of great science fiction written and a lot of great science fiction on TV. And they're also the springboard.
Morris, can we do the 80s another day?
Yeah, we absolutely
those
can.
Those really basic cameras that, you know, not, what is it, 9 megapixels, tiny amounts of megapixels and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we will. Morris Mislowski, in the meantime, thank you so much for your insight. We're basically